You're listening to T&M Coaching Unplugged. T&M Unplugged features the diverse perspectives of a thriving global community of coaches, leaders, and experts. And it's all for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to T&M Unplugged, the space when you elevate your minds, your hearts, and your soul to the next level of itself, the space when you get inspired with the new positive creative ideas. And my, oh my, today we're going to be inspired. I'm looking forward for this recording for quite some time. We were trying to schedule it, and then it got postponed, and again and again, and I am always curious when this happens, why? As today, we have Ed Irons joining us, and we're going to be talking about transhumanism. My God, this is a very big topic that we need to unfold, demystify, talk about, and understand. But before we dive into this topic, let me briefly introduce Ed, who is a dear colleague and collaborator and partner for many, many, many years. So Ed has vast experience in Asia and in China. He was running his export in training business there. He also has done executive coaching, leadership development training in Asia as well. He's also has done his academic research, and his focus has been on helping others understand Asia. That was part of his amazing career. And he's done a great work with myself as well, because of every time I was confused about getting and understanding Asian culture, specifically China, around to Ed to ask him questions. So he worked in China, in Hong Kong, in Japan, in Thailand. He speaks Mandarin, Cantonese, Japanese, some of Thai, you know, a bit of Korean, you know, and so on and so forth. He has broad experience in Asia, as I mentioned, but his experience is also going into the leadership development coaching and training. And this is also part of our connection between Ed and me, because we have collaborated on numerous of leadership development programs across the world. Excellent coaching programs across the world, and we have literally impacted people's hearts and minds to become the better version of themselves. Also, Ed is a good writer, and he is a good researcher, and he was studying religion for quite some time, and this is how he actually got into transhumanism, because one of his recent articles was on that topic. So, Ed, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you for having me. I love this topic and how we can see it relate to the T&M work, the T&M network, and the future. So the transhumanism is all about the future and how humanity is developing, which is a fraught topic.
I know, but you know, as I told you, sometimes I feel excited by it and sometimes I feel frightened by it. So for me, I fluctuate between those two. So let's open it up and demystify it. You said this is an important topic for the future, for all of us. So how would you like to start? What is transhumanism? Can we start with that big wide?
Sure. I see it as a movement. And some people have called it the religion of Silicon Valley. And a lot of the Silicon Valley venture capitalists and entrepreneurs are behind transhumanist ideas. It's not just Silicon Valley, as I'll explain, but the ideas have really caught hold there. You know, Yuval Harari, mm-hmm. his writing,
yes.
He mentions he doesn't focus on the term transhumanism, but a lot of his content, like how in the future through technology we can achieve bliss, for instance, and immortality. Mm-hmm. And these are themes he focuses on a lot. That's why his writing is so popular in Silicon Valley. So I see it as a way to grapple with the potential for overcoming human limitations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in other words, how we can go beyond what it means to be human. And that's why you're feeling a little bit freaked out by it, right?
Yes, exactly. Because I'm thinking, what are the human limitations that we really would love to overcome with transhumanism? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, the first one, the big one is immortality. So is it possible through technology to extend our lives? And in other words, to make us virtually immortal. So years like 500 years, 700 years, 1,000 years, lifespans, where the only way you die is through accident. Is that possible? Well, you can imagine that in science fiction, and transhumanists they have a belief. So in that sense, it's a belief system that technology will get us there. You've heard of cryonics, preserving through freezing. And this is freezing at very low temperatures. And that's also part of the transhumanist movement. So you can see that there's several different buckets inside the overall movement of transhumanism. One of them is this immortality quest, which is nothing new, right? It's humans have always imagined, what if I could be a god, basically? And that's why Yuval's Harari's book was called Homo Deus, because humans will become the human god, right? So this is nothing new. That's what's interesting about transhumanism, because we have this fascination with current technology and like science fiction, right? The possibility of a high-tech future. But also, it connects these ancient instincts that are part of human nature. You know, why am I limited? Why do I have to die?
Exactly. Why am I limited? Why do I have to die? So that's one of the big limitations that we all want to transcend and be in the space of immortality and choose, basically, if we want to die and how we want to die.
Are you sure? Are you sure you don't want to die?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
I study religion, too. And there's one sense, and a lot of writers have noticed this, that it's the finality of of life, the fact that there is an endpoint that gives everything we do meaning.
Yeah.
And if it were an endless horizon, then what's the point of striving? What's the point of trying to accomplish things? What's the point of trying to be a better person? It's almost like Groundhog Day. Remember the movie?
Of course.
And he went through the cycle where he said, what the hell? It's just the same anyway. So why try? Why not be a jerk? Why not be a hedonist? And why not treat people poorly, right? He went through this whole cycle where he had to wake up to meaning, the sense of meaning. So transhumanism is a take on what it means to be human. That's what I think the religious aspect is.
Yes. So if you talk a little bit more on that, what does it mean to be human from the transhumanism point of view? What would you say?
They believe that we are a finite being that doesn't have to be. So we have unlimited potential. That's the way to see it. It's like through technology. So there's an absolute faith in the power of technology to transform. And we can apply it to ourselves and then transcend the past, what it meant to be a human being. And this is something that is built into us, into our DNA. So there's a lot of obstacles, mental obstacles and physical obstacles that have to be overcome. But there's a basic faith that we can do that. And that thereby, we will become a different kind of being.
And when we emerge as the different kind of being, based on your research and topic of interest, what did you figure out? What kind of the new being we can emerge to be? Number one is whether it's immortal. What else?
Well, one aspect is that we could leave our bodies behind. So let's say you have your basic software preserved. Let's say you're about to die. You preserve your body and your head or something. And it's frozen. And then in 1,000 years, they connect it up to a computer. And so the only thing that really counts is your soft programming. Your memories will be there, your DNA configuration, but you won't need the kind of bodies we have now. So imagine a future in which we will be able to discard our physicality. And so you can imagine that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because to be human is to have a body, right? We're physical beings.
Yeah.
We're spiritual beings, but we're also physical.
Yeah. I agree. Absolutely.
So we could be we can imagine ourselves to be pure light, pure energy, or uploading ourselves, whatever that means. It could be maybe there's a soul, maybe there isn't, but uploading all that into a computer.
And then existing with this framework of the everlasting wireless digital universe, right?
And then we would interact, I guess, my operating system, if it had a distinct identity, which is a big question mark, would be able to interact with yours, just like we do now as individuals. So the individuality could be maintained. Maybe, though, we would just say, screw it. That's legacy. We don't need to be individuals. Let's just merge and become one giant consciousness in the universe, floating around the universe somewhere. So that's one option. Okay. But option number two is that we merge with machines, with computers.
All right. And,
how would you know, Elon Musk is already doing, he's got a company that's developing ways to connect the brain to computers. And you see this in prosthetics. You see a lot of tech, the hearing aid, for instance. You see, we're already replacing body parts, right? Mm. So it's just taking that trend to the extreme where we can get rid of the body because we're replacing it with other mechanical components. And that way we will merge with computers and our thinking will also merge. Mm. So we become a hybrid being. So that's another possibility. We're not individual. We're a new kind of being. It's a hybrid, right? Mm. And a third possibility is that we remain at our level as kind of with all our faults, all our beliefs and all that stuff, all our baggage, right? And the computers take over because sometime this century, the power of computing will exceed human thinking. Okay. And that point is called the singularity. And that's one aspect of transhumanist belief, is that there will be a point in history at which computers will exceed our intelligence. Mm-hmm. And they will be so intelligent. It will be like when we see an ant now. Mm-hmm. So there are ants are down there doing their thing. And there's some stuff we don't understand 100%, but we exist at a different plane. And we see that ourselves as existing at a different plane and more sophisticated. You know, we have all this stuff. And the computers will be like that with us. We will be primitive, less than primitive. We'll be like single cell organisms to them. They will be functioning at a level that we can't possibly comprehend. And the way technology, computer technology is developing, that's a very real scenario. So that's one of the areas that people are very worried about, this singularity thing. Mm-hmm. And then we could have a Terminator kind of
situation going.
Where it's not necessarily a positive. They could see us as a virus, right? Say, look, is it worth keeping these guys? So one option is that, you know, they just keep us in a little area and we live our life and they treat us like pets kind of, right? And they do their high-level stuff. The other option is that, look, it's a virus. We need to get rid of humanity. It's bad news. So that's scary.
The planet. It's destroying the planet, polluting, and you know, whatever we are able to do, right? It's because it can endanger the life for all, including computers, correct?
Yes. It's not worth it. Yeah. The risk of keeping humans around, they're obviously dangerous organisms for for the universe. So people are projecting into the future, but it's all based on the speed of development of technology. And that's very real, right? Moore's law and the how fast the technology continues to develop. And right now computers have specific intelligence. Mm-hmm. So using algorithms, as you know, when you go on Amazon, it'll suggest this and suggest that. And sometimes it's right, right? It's getting better and better at guessing us, but they don't have general intelligence. Mm-hmm. So when I say they surpass us, it'll be in terms of general intelligence. And you could say consciousness. They'll be able to not only mimic and understand completely how we function, all of our emotions, our social interactions, they'll get it at that point. They will exceed it. Then the question becomes, what kind of beings will they be? Will they have souls, for instance?
Yeah.
You know, will they have religion? And that's one thing I've explored in a recent paper. Will they be kind? Will they have values? You know, this So that's as if we're separate from them. And that's a transhumanist outcome too.
Yeah. And this is where I would love to go a little bit more, you know, with the recent paper that you have published around the religion and transhumanism. And you mentioned something throughout our conversation that, you know, do we really have a soul? And when we are able to kind of play in this potentiality, would we really upload our soul to the infinite digital universe or not? And so what is your take around the soul and what makes human beings unique?
Yeah, you know, because I've studied religion a lot, and the, as a someone who studies religion, our initial take is that we want to be objective and we want to understand it and not make a value judgment. So I'm able to study a variety of religions without saying, well, that one is evil, that one is not, you know, except in extreme cases. So I study new religion. That's my particular field, especially new religions in China. So I'm tracking people like Falun Gong and these Almighty God, these different groups that come up throughout Chinese history. They've been there. But so I'm looking at transhumanism in this life as the potential for religious development. And I've already found 7 established transhumanist religions.
Wow, 7 already.
Oh my already, God. And some are just on the internet and some seem to be
amazing.
Pretty low overhead.
Tell us more.
There's more. There's definitely more out there and more coming.
I don't know about the educators about 7 you found out. I'm so curious. Tell us.
Some of them are concerned with cryonics, like this okay. preservation. So there's a church of cryonics that they have this very strong belief that if you preserve the body now, you can bring it back with personality. You can resurrect is the right word in the religious terms.
Exactly.
Resurrection. So that should ring bells in terms of people who see Christian theology, right?
Yes.
Resurrection. So there is a strain of Christian theology that believed in resurrection. That's basic to Christianity. It's not just a strain. It's everybody. That Jesus was resurrected and that those who believe will also be resurrected. So this idea of resurrection is nothing new. And the cryonics is just another take on that. But it's coupled with strong faith in technology. Now, is there a foundation for that faith in technology? That's the interesting question. And what I see is that, yes, maybe it'll happen, but maybe it won't. You know, but the transhumanists that I've studied all have a strong faith that technology will pull us into this new age. And it's an article of faith because we don't know. Sure, technology is advancing very quickly. But are we sure that computers will be the same kind of being, and will their intelligence exceed ours? We don't know. There's just a lot of unknowns. So I'm more I'm hesitate to commit to any belief system, even though it looks very likely. That's kind of my position, and that's it helps me to see things objectively. But the real transhumanists will just go whole hog. And they have absolute faith in the power of technology to resolve all problems, basically.
And sometimes, you know, the power of faith to the technology to resolve all our issue goes hand in hand with, you know, us not taking full responsibility as humanity, because yet there is somebody else who would do things on our behalf. So let's talk about sort out our pollution issues, you know, create the agricultural goods for everybody. Sort out the shortages of food, the earthquakes, the environmental disasters, wars. So I think that we kind of tend to want to delegate some of our responsibilities in this case to technology by saying, oh, mighty technology can resolve everything on behalf of ourselves. And, you know, I think that's also a slippery road if we don't take full ownership of ourselves and work alongside with technology to work with the technology as an ally to help us resolve our issues and get us to resurrect even into the new level of consciousness, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a faith. It's a faith system in the absolute ability of technology to save us. And that is scary, because you could have a Did you see that Tom Cruise movie where he was wearing this exoskeleton?
Yes.
And he was able to fight the aliens.
Yes.
But because he was Tom Cruise and he was finally able to do it. So, but that's a militarized future where we're merging in a way, but we have a body, but we're still merging with exoskeleton in order to save humanity from the aliens, right? So militarization of technology is a very real thing, right? So the military development and hardware goes on as we speak, right? Mm-hmm. And is that the kind of technological future we want? You know, is anybody looking at and calling and making the calling us out and saying, how do we want the technology to develop? That's the real question. Or are we just letting it go full steam ahead in any direction with assuming that it'll work out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the question you're talking about. And it applies to a lot of issues, not just climate change, which is the obvious one. You know, there have been real wild suggestions for solving climate change through technology, right?
Like, of course.
Putting dust in the air and changing the sun's direction through mirrors. And there's all sorts of ideas. Maybe some are great. Well, maybe some will work. But maybe some are us playing God and really transforming the nature in a way that won't be positive. Look at how humans don't have a good record, right? When it comes to playing God.
Yeah.
But the population is something else, and oil, and there's a lot of faith that we'll find a new power source. We don't have to worry. We don't have to kill the economy. Let's just keep developing. You know, a lot of these are articles of faith.
Mm. So as you studied religion, do you believe there is a God that regulates all of this, including technology?
Yeah.
This is a tricky question, but where are you with that?
Question. There's a lot I don't know. And I think it was Pascal's Wager, the French philosopher Pascal. Of course, he lived in an era where Catholicism was dominant, but he said maybe there isn't, and I can understand that as a philosopher, you can understand maybe there is no God,
mm-hmm.
maybe there is a God. Mm-hmm. Which way am I going to bet? Because which is the safest bet? So I'm kind of in that boat. I don't want to close the door on there being a greater power in the universe. Because do we understand everything about the universe? No. There's so much we don't understand. So I come from a position of humility, which kind of indicates to me that I want to keep that option open. And I'm willing to go with there being a God. And I don't want to blame everything on him. And I don't want to associate that with structures, human structures like religious organizations, which are a different thing. But I don't want to say categorically there's no such thing as a higher deity. That seems to be hubris to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it.
Of course. You know, I think that space of being open and to be humble enough to you know, be in inquiry all the time and to maintain the objective open view of there is the highest, you know, force behind all of this. It's a wise one. And that brings us to technology, because if there is a higher and bigger force that we call God, universe, consciousness, universal power, whatever the language source, we use that language as well, then that force has something to say when it comes to our technological development.
Yeah. But there's an argument that you could say that God is given, let's say we use the word God, but a higher force has given us the ability to develop technology in order to achieve the destiny of humanity, which is God's will, let's say. So you can make that argument too, that technology is aligned with the divine purpose, let's say.
Yeah, with the divine plan, with the divine purpose. So the technology serves the purpose to help us achieve what we need to achieve in that whole unfoldment of us realizing our divine mission or potential and purpose.
So a lot of religions, Mormonism, Christianity, and you could, I'm very interested in the links between Taoism and Confucianism and this kind of belief system of transhumanism. So I think there's no category. You can't mix them. They're mixed all the time. That's what humans do. We mix things.
And make the fusion of everything.
Absolutely.
So in addition to one of the religions that you mentioned, the transhumanism religious movement, you know, you mentioned there are a few more. What else did you find out? Do you remember what other religions? One is the one that fully believes in immersion of humanity and machines, and they believe this is what we need to do to be able to achieve our potential and so on and so forth. What else is out there?
Well, I can mention a couple of other very interesting examples. One is this Russian thinker, Fedorov, mm-hmm. who died around in the early 1900s. But he was very influential in Russian. He was an Orthodox Christian. He believed fully in the mission, the divine mission of resurrecting the soul. But he felt that we don't wait until Christ comes back for everyone to be resurrected. He felt it was our mission now to use technology to bring back everyone who's ever lived, every human who's ever existed. Mm-hmm. And how was he going to do this? He was vague about the technology, but he felt it was our mission to do this. And he had a kind of intuition that DNA development would help us do this. So this was way before we knew anything about DNA. And he said, okay, because we're bringing all these people back, how many billions are we talking about, right? The earth will not be big enough, right?
Right.
Therefore, we have to move some people to other planets. So he was one of the fathers of the Russian space program. This guy and these guys, these scientists who were instrumental in developing this Russian space program, a lot of them were believers in Fedorov. So that's one strand that's still very active in Russia. Russia is one of the areas where transhumanism has very deep roots. And the U.S. is another. And it's taking off in China, too, which is something I'm trying to study very deeply. But another very interesting group is called TerraSim, and it's more established. And there, I think it was 10 years ago or so it was set up. It's a belief system. You can join online. And it's got very clear articles of faith, but you can record your memories, your thoughts, your physical being. There's a way to do this, record it. Using computers to be uploaded later. So the person behind this is Martin Rothblatt, who was the head of Sirius XM, you know, the radio satellite radio station, and set up a biotech company, and is a fascinating person, and who has money, okay, billionaire class, and who is really behind these ideas. And so she is in favor of mind, transferring all your mind, your soul, your thoughts, all of that can be transferred up. It's an article of faith that your soul will go there. If there is a soul, your soul will follow. If you just get all the neural connections and the electronic activity in your body, if you can record that and understand that, we're good to go. We can upload.
And
this is real. This is happening.
I know. Fascinating. I'm still a believer there is a soul. I have to be honest with you. I believe in myself that there is an essence of us that we call the soul, that is a unique blueprint. How I see soul is that there's a unique point through which the consciousness expresses itself through us. So if you think that we have an everlasting, ever-evolving collective consciousness that we have, human consciousness, the point of how that consciousness expresses it through my unique vessel is that point that is my signature, my soul. And I also believe that throughout our life, or if you go further into Buddhism, through our lives, we accumulate the knowledge, the experience, the memory of what we've learned in these different lifetimes, that enriches our soul through life, from life to life to life. So, you know, that soul in itself is immortal by my belief. I mean, of course, we can, you know, connect it to the technology and upload it and make it even more immortal. But that's always the dilemma. What do we do with the soul and technology? Yeah. How those two merge together? So that's something that and I know it makes a lot of people nervous, you know, when it comes to.
But there are groups. There's a Mormon Transhumanist Society. There's a Christian Transhumanist Society, and there's no conflict between the ideas, the basic ideas of transhumanism and their theologies. So I think this, and they maintain that in Christianity, the soul is unique, like you said, and individual, and the God is there helping you to return to your spiritual essence. So there's no conflict, I think, with these ideas. But if you ask a typical transhumanist, I think they would say, "I'm an atheist. I don't buy into any of that religious stuff." So it's funny. We think about these things in different terms, using different terminologies. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the novel, Arthur C. Clarke's novel, Childhood's End? Remember that?
Yes, vaguely, I do. Yeah.
All the kids started to act funny, and they started to just leave home and walk, and they all ended up in Australia. And all the children started to walk around in a giant circle in the desert in Australia, faster and faster, and the adults didn't know what to do. It was a crisis. And eventually, they moved fast enough so they became a spiritual force that left the Earth and went into outer space. So they merged, in other words. This was the evolution of humanity. And the people like us, who were already individuals, were left behind on the Earth. And suddenly there was no meaning because there was no children, right? So that was a very, that book really talked about a possibility of spiritual evolution where we go beyond being individuals into being a greater consciousness, part of a greater consciousness. And a lot of religions talk about how the it was a unity, and somehow we got lost, and we're our souls are meandering, and the ultimate goal is to merge again with the deity. A lot of religions have that story. It's like we're finding our way back.
Mm-hmm. And technology can be an ally, right? In Absolutely. Finding our way back.
Yeah. So these narratives can connect and merge into new narratives. That's what's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And tough question for you as well. Do you really, truly, honestly, based on your research and both of you, your hearts of hearts, feel at this moment in time with the transhumanism movement and where we are in the development through Silicon Valley, through Russia, through China, also Europe is big there with European Space Agency as well. Do you feel that we are in a good standing, in a good relationship with the technology, this agenda? Is it something that it's done with the intent, with the pure intent of supporting humanity to become a best possible version of itself, but there is little bit of not know or danger or manipulation behind this or the agenda that we don't even know, you know?
Yeah, I think there are real risks. I think there are real risks. Some of, like, Nick Bostrom was one of the philosophers who's involved. He says we should cease or strictly control certain research agendas. For nanotechnology is one. And the genetic manipulation is another. So I think that some of these technologies...
Cloning is a third as well, cloning, genetic manipulation.
Absolutely. And the argument is, well, if we don't do it, someone else is going to do it. So why don't we just do it, right? So this is a very... it's easy to kind of put your morals aside and just go for the technology. And I think that's quite dangerous. So I think any of these decisions have to have an ethical dimension. I think we need to develop this. Our children need to get this and understand what ethics means so they can make the right decisions. So it's a question of innovation and how we make decisions in technological innovation. That's something that we can't just let the experts do. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't have enough faith in them. I guess that's what I mean.
I completely agree because they're driven with different intention. You know, so if you don't have an ethics code there, and we have technological sector driving this innovation with a completely different, you know, intention behind it, being a profit, it can be as simple as making money to other agendas, then, you know, we need to make sure that we're in relationship with this. And that's the reason why I think it's so sobering for all of us to understand that we are already in the transhumanism movement. This is nothing that is now new. This is already happening. Like artificial intelligence movement is already happening. It's an integral part of our life, but we're not really aware of it.
So that's the discussion.
Yes.
That's the discussion that we all need to be having right now. Now, whether some of these dates, like the singularity, will really be a huge transformation, or will it just be nothing? Like, remember Y2K? That turned up to be a non-event, right? So I don't know. I mean, no. But we need to be having these discussions.
Yeah, we do. And we also need to educate ourselves, you know, not to be in a space of not knowing what transhumanism even is, or being close enough to reject it because it triggers our sensitive spots and we begin, you know, subconsciously raising into the fears from the sci-fi movies or horror movies when we see the transhumanism militarizing the action and then people close up immediately and say, I don't want to know about it. So, you know, I think the important point that we really want to drive here together is that we need to educate and we need to know about it. And at the same time, we need to have a deep conversation, deep discussions around the topic and how is this going to impact us and our generations to come. Because we had maybe you and I will upload our consciousness and we never die.
Yeah. And I'm game.
Conversation.
Basically, you know, I'm game also for that, you know. But I just think we need to talk about it. We need to think it through.
So we're coming close to our conversation in this podcast. So how would you like to sum it up for the people? What would be the message that you would like to leave our audience with for people who are listening and they got into this topic and they're thinking, wow, this is an interesting subject. Where would you like to leave it?
Well, there's plenty of sources. There's plenty of ways in. There's stuff all over the internet. I think that it's a good place to start is science fiction. I really believe in the value of reading science fiction and to open up our minds to potential. That's absolutely part of being human, and it's okay to explore. But also it connects to human technology, interhuman, interpersonal. There's a lot of things that we get closed off to because we're funny animals and we have these habits that we develop and these defenses. So there's that angle too. We shouldn't overlook what it means to develop ourselves as people. It's not just about hardware. It's not just about hardware. There's many forms of technology. So I would be in favor of open exploration. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So let's leave it with that. I love that closing. In favor to open exploration, not being afraid of it, not being paralyzed by it, but be in the space of openness and exploration to really learn about it and to see what is the most positive implication or impact of the transhumanism movement. So, Ed, thank you so much for being here with us today, for elevating us to the topic that not many people talk about in our community and in our network. Mm-hmm. So thank you. I'm sure these conversations will continue going forward. So for the listeners, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this chat today and goodbye. See you soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye.